Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said yesterday that the nation could abandon its nuclear agreement with world powers if the United States imposes any new sanctions. Meanwhile, mid-August was North Korea's self-imposed deadline for a missile demonstration, but now dictator Kim Jong-un said he's not going to fire missiles at this time, according to state media. The decision comes after his announcement last week that North Korea would strike near the U.S. territory of Guam.
Valerie Lindsay is the executive director of the Wisconsin Project on Nuclear Arms Control. Valerie, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with Iran. What was your reaction to President Rouhani's comments about the potential to pull out of the nuclear deal?
Well, I suppose it was the remarks were sort of predictable given the escalating nature of the rhetoric between the United States and Iran on the nuclear agreement. So you have President Trump saying that this is a terrible deal and that the United States needs to get out of it, and then you have the Iranian president saying much the same thing.
And we have a little bit of President Trump's comments about the deal.
It was a terrible agreement. It shouldn't have been signed. It shouldn't have been negotiated the way it was negotiated. I'm all for agreements, but that was a bad one, as bad as I've ever seen negotiated. They are not living up to the spirit of the agreement, I can tell you that. And we're analyzing it very, very carefully, and we'll have something to say about it in the not-too-distant future. But Iran has not lived up to the spirit of the agreement, and they have to do that. They have to do that.
And Valerie, what is it that the president objects to about the Iran New Deal?
Well, there are some issues with the deal itself, which I should say are narrowly focused on Iran's nuclear program. So just, you know, this was a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, that the agreement was concluded, and the idea was that Iran would restrict certain parts of its nuclear program, the most worrisome parts from a nuclear weapons point of view, for a period of time, and in exchange would receive sanctions relief. And so on those very narrow measures, the deal is largely functioning. But when the president refers to, you know, Iran respecting the spirit of the agreement, he's referring to things like Iranian activism in the region, Iranian ballistic missile tests, Iran's support for terrorism, for the regime of Bashar al-Assad in Syria, and things like that. So that the agreement, the hope that the agreement would kind of constrain Iran in this behavior has not borne out.
And we've seen some movement from Iran in the terrain of ballistic missiles. What's been happening there?
Well, there was the test of a space launch vehicle a few weeks ago, which is of concern because it has a relevance for ballistic missiles in terms of technology. And then there have been a number of other ballistic missile tests since the agreement was concluded. But again, the agreement itself does not specifically address Iran's ballistic missile program. And so you have Iran saying that this is not a violation of the agreement. And you have the United States saying, yes, but the ballistic missile program is intended to develop nuclear weapons. And the history of Iran's nuclear program and its ballistic missile program are intertwined. And so you're pursuing this, which is really against the spirit of the nuclear agreement.
And the U.S. just signed into law new sanctions on Iran, Russia, and North Korea. Can you tell us about what the sanctions are and what their function is?
Yeah, so on Iran, the sanctions are, I would say, focused on the areas that the nuclear agreement doesn't cover, which are really the areas of great concern right now. Iran's support for terrorism, Iran's expanding ballistic missile program, the work of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps in Syria, Yemen, and other places. And so the sanctions in that law with respect to Iran have to do with those areas. And then, as you mentioned, the law also includes sanctions on Russia, in particular Russian energy development at projects with Russian energy companies. And then on North Korea, it essentially codifies a lot of things that were already in place with regard to North Korea's nuclear and missile program.
And looking forward, I mean, Iran has said that they would withdraw quickly. I think the quote was something a matter of hours. Going too far with the statement there from Iran? Could it really be dissolved in a matter of hours, or is this something that would take months or at least weeks to unravel?
Well, In terms of Iran's ability to start doing the things that the nuclear program restricts, it could start doing those things immediately. But in order for Iran to reconstitute its program, its nuclear program, and get it to the place where it was when the nuclear agreement was implemented, that would not take hours. That would take months, potentially even years, depending on, you know, what your calculation is of Iran's capability. So yes, Iran could walk away from the agreement just as we could or any of the other parties to the agreement, because remember what the administration may sometimes not remember is that there are six countries party to this agreement, not just the U.S. and Iran, but also Russia, China, France, Germany, and the U.K.
And we're talking to Valerie Lindsay right now, executive director of the Wisconsin Project on Nuclear Arms Control. And we're talking about nuclear proliferation from Iran and North Korea. And moving on now to North Korea, state media there reported that dictator Kim Jong-un looked at plans to attack Guam but decided not to fire missiles, said he wanted to wait and see what the United States did. What do you think is behind that particular decision?
Well, it's very difficult to know for sure. I mean, there's a lot of speculation. One possibility is that this is very different. Threatening to target a particular place is very different from conducting a missile test. And whether North Korea can accurately fire a missile and hit Guam is, for some people, a question mark. And perhaps there was a concern that the targeting would not be successful, and North Korea's leverage over the United States would therefore go down. But there are other people who are suggesting that this is an opening for the United States, that North Koreans are perhaps willing to negotiate on some narrow way on the missile program, and so that's perhaps another possibility. But again, it's when it comes to North Korea, very difficult to say exactly what's motivating a decision.
For those watching these rising tensions in the last couple of weeks, it seemed as though there's always been tension with North Korea, but that things escalated very quickly. Can you give us a little of the backstory on what led to that last week?
Well, there's been a kind of an escalating rhetorical back and forth. You had a series of North Korean missile tests of increasing gravity in terms of the ability of those missiles to reach the United States. So again, there's disagreement about exactly how far North Korea's missiles could fly, whether they could accurately reach a target in the United States, and in particular the lower 48 states. But the idea is that North Korea is aggressively pursuing its ballistic missile program. It's aggressively trying to miniaturize its nuclear weapons so that it could fit on a missile. And then the question is, could it use those missiles to deliver a nuclear warhead and hit a target in the United States? And so the last couple of weeks have seen North Korea make improvements on that front. And then you have, in response, the United States imposing sanctions, also the United Nations imposing sanctions. And so then you have some of the rhetoric of President Trump and of Kim Jong-un on the North Korea side. And so you have this sort of escalating both capabilities, escalating, but also the rhetoric.
We're talking with Valerie Lindsay. She stays with us. She's executive director of the Wisconsin Project on Nuclear Arms Control. And we're talking about nuclear proliferation from Iran to North Korea.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What kind of policy on nuclear proliferation should the United States have? Should the U.S. back out of the Iran nuclear deal? How would you like to see the U.S. government respond to North Korea's nuclear program? Call in now. Share your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue our conversation and take your calls in just a little bit on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're picking up our conversation with Valerie Lindsay from the Wisconsin Project on Nuclear Arms Control about nuclear proliferation.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think the U.S. should do to respond to nuclear proliferation in other countries? How do you think the U.S. should handle nuclear ambitions in Iran? What do you think the Iran deal, President Trump's plans maybe to try to get out of it? What about North Korea? What kind of nuclear policy would you like to see the U.S. adopt? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Valerie, when North Korea initially threatened to attack Guam last week, President Trump had this to say.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before.
And Valerie, very strong rhetoric there from President Trump. Also in recent days, a strong response from President Moon in South Korea, almost being read as a rebuke to President Trump. What do you see about his comments?
About President Trump's comments?
President Moon's comments to
President
Trump.
Moon's comments. Well, it shows the sort of delicate balance in, you know, in the region and how the United States can both reinforce its alliances and its treaty commitments with South Korea and with Japan, contribute to sort of the diplomatic process in trying to resolve the conflict with North Korea in a diplomatic fashion while remaining, continuing to have a strong response to statements that the North Korean leader has made. So it's always been a delicate balance. I would say that this particular administration has certainly amped up the rhetoric as compared to past administrations. But when you look at the language of Secretary of State Tillerson, Secretary of Defense Mattis, you see that there is this desire to sort of maintain balance and understanding that the alliances and the responsibilities that the United States has with South Korea and with Japan require a certain amount of diplomacy and tact. You had them, for instance, arguing in an op-ed recently about switching from this notion of strategic patience as the U.S. policy to strategic accountability. So maybe more of a response, holding North Korea more accountable, staying less on the sidelines, but at the same time, you know, not any sort of a militaristic type response.
And it seems as though there hasn't been one consistent message from the White House. We heard President Trump there talking about fire and fury. And then in subsequent days, we heard messages which were more tempered. So how does that read to North Korea?
Well, it reads to North Korea like it reads to a lot of the rest of the world, which is with uncertainty, which I would say is the most worrisome part of what's happening with North Korea, which is that you have escalating tensions and an increasing amount of uncertainty, and therefore an increasing chance of misunderstanding and miscalculation on our part and on the North Korean part.
So you said one possible tack would be holding North Korea accountable. What would that look like?
Well, you see things like greater action first at the United Nations, and here you have a continuity with the policy of the past administration, of the Obama administration. So broadening the sanctions at the United Nations to include more sectors of the North Korean economy, imposing bans on North Korean exports of not only coal but also iron ore and other things, seafood, lead. So if North Korea's main trading partner, China, can be brought on board to these types of export bans, then that could have a real financial impact on North Korea. It may not immediately reverse their program, but it may well make it difficult for them to raise funds to fuel the program and make them more, perhaps more willing to participate in useful negotiations.
Now, sanctions on North Korea in the past haven't seen as especially effective. Do you think that this would be different?
Well, it certainly has to be tried. I think it could be different, again, if we can get China to be more committed to the sanctions. And this administration has shown itself willing to directly punish Chinese, for instance, Chinese financial institutions that are continuing to be a lifeline to North Korea. And so if China does not do more now in the context of the new UN sanctions, we could see more direct U.S. sanctions on Chinese companies dealing with North Korea, and in particular Chinese banks dealing with North Korea.
And Valerie,
I'm sorry, just to wrap up, yeah. I think that those types of sanctions could indeed be effective.
Before we wrap up, we've been talking about North Korea. We've been talking about Iran. Let's talk a little bit about nuclear weapon threats that aren't getting as much attention as Iran and North Korea. Where else should we be focusing attention?
Well, India and Pakistan, for instance. These are two neighbors, both with nuclear weapons, both with a number of different missiles that they're able to use to deliver nuclear weapons. They have an ongoing border conflict. Both countries are increasing the size of their nuclear weapons stockpile, the size of the fuel that can be used to make nuclear weapons, the size of the stockpile of fuel that can be used to make nuclear weapons. And there's not a great deal of attention paid to this problem. And, you know, as a non-proliferation organization, we're very concerned about the risk of more escalation and of potentially a nuclear conflict between these two countries.
Do you think there's been too much focus on North Korea and Iran and not enough focus on India and Pakistan?
Clearly, the North Korean program is of great concern, and over the last couple of months, an even greater concern. And the past policy of the strategic patience has led that has created an even bigger problem in North Korea. So I'm certainly not arguing that we should be ignoring North Korea. I do think, coming back to Iran, that the Iran nuclear deal, while it has a number of problems with it, is at the moment containing the most worrisome parts of Iran's nuclear program. And so the idea that at this point in time we would just walk away from the agreement, which the Trump administration has threatened, I don't think is in the U.S. national security interest, because of the fact that it is sort of doing the job of containing Iran right now on the nuclear front.
Valerie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks very much for having me.
Valerie Lindsay is the executive director of the Wisconsin Project on Nuclear Arms Control, joining us there to talk about nuclear proliferation from Iran to North Korea. And you can keep that conversation going over on the Central Time Facebook page.